is Dorothy Wirtz. I live at 1711 West State Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona. I attended the University of Wisconsin between 1939 and 1944. I was a graduate student there in French language and literature. Question number four. I graduated from Keokuk Senior High School, Keokuk, Iowa. I attended Culver Stockton College and the State University of Iowa before coming to Wisconsin. Question number six. I selected the University of Wisconsin specifically because it had a French house, and I had learned French by the reading method, and although we had conversation courses, I wanted to know how to speak the language. Question number seven. I can only compare the University of Wisconsin with the University of Iowa. I've always felt that at Iowa we were encouraged to be subjective and do our own thinking. This was also true of Wisconsin, although we were expected to know many more facts. I feel the approach at the University of Wisconsin was much more scientific, and perhaps at Iowa a little more on the artistic side. Question eight. When I left for Wisconsin, I took with me one footlocker and one suitcase full of clothes, and that's all. Nine. I traveled from my home to Madison alone. Number 10. An earlier arrival greeted me at the French house, a resident-to-be of the French house. Number 13, my faculty advisor was the chairman of the French department, Hugh A. Smith, and he spent as much time with me as necessary and was most helpful. He could tell from my transcript just which courses I needed most as a graduate student. Question 15, male and female students were allowed to dress however they chose. I remember I often chose to wear a hat because it was very cold in Wisconsin. And that made me look a little strange because it was not too fashionable to wear a hat. Most students went bareheaded. The classes, question number 19, were generally co-ed. And yes, women students were treated the same as men students in terms of course expectations, access to materials, and so forth. Question number 23. The professors in the French department gave a mix of lecture, discussion, and recitation courses. And I approve of that mix. I think all lecture is deadly, and that if the students aren't allowed to discuss what they read, it doesn't stick with them very well. Question 24. Of course, in strictly language courses, students were expected to participate a great deal in class, in conversation courses, for example. Question 25, the students were usually addressed by their last name. Miss Wirtz, for example, was the way I was called on. And we addressed our professors as professor. Question 28, yes, there was quite a lot of memorization involved. There always is in language courses. And in literature courses, you must know dates and titles. And, for example, in a history of the language course, there's a great deal of memorization connected with a course like that. 29. The classes met usually for three times a week for 1 hour each. There were quite a few two-hour classes, too, for graduate students. Question 30, how much homework were you typically assigned per course, per night? Well, The graduate load is pretty heavy. Ordinarily, undergraduates are expected to prepare for 2 hours for every class hour they take, and graduates had that and a little bit extra. 31. Our professors were most accessible outside the classroom. They did hold office hours and were generous with their time. My thesis advisor, especially Professor Michel, was generous with his time. 32. Yes, we did have contact with our professors a great deal at the French House. They would come there for dîner gala, receptions of native French people, for parties and special ceremonies that we had there. Question 33. The course grades were generally determined by term papers, quizzes, class participation, final exams, everything. I remember as a graduate teaching assistant, our final exams were made up by everyone in the department. Each person was asked to contribute a certain portion, and the entire department graded the first and second year course exams, so that the students really had to be good to stand up under so much objective examination. Now I see that I have more or less answered question 36. The school did have an exam break, and that was helpful. Usually, I believe, 3 or 4 days. Blue books were provided, as I remember. I have never taken anything like an open book or take-home exam. I don't approve of those. I don't think you're really being examined when you take that type of test. The exams, question 37, were generally proctored either by the professor of the course or by a graduate teaching assistant. 39, the final grades were generally mailed. Question 40, I never did take a lab course at the University of Wisconsin, but I taught one there in the summer of 45, and the lab equipment was almost non-existent. Question 41. I can't say that any one professor influenced me more than the other at Wisconsin. They were all equally good and had something different to contribute to my education. I learned something from each of them and based my own teaching later on some of their methods. Professor Smith was a very dignified looking man, already white haired and rather up in years at the time he was chairman. I think he retired shortly afterward and Professor Harris replaced him. I'll speak more about these teachers later. Professor Smith in particular, I feel, contributed to our field by having founded the French House. That was his idea. He and Professor Harris, Professor Bandy, the Stanoviches often had students to their homes, and that was an invaluable experience. We got to know the professors much more personally that way. All of them were good teachers as well as professors who published, and I'll take them up one by one. Kazimir Stanovich was of Polish descent. He too was a very dignified looking man, balding, almost practically bald, rather slow of speech. I must confess that his course in 16th century literature was not one of my favorites. I didn't feel too much affinity for that century in the first place, and his presentation was not as exciting as that of most professors. Beside that, I had a problem. I was sitting next to a young man who loved to write poetry in class about what the professor was saying or about the professor or about the students, and he would expect me to add a line every now and then to his poetry. Naturally, a professor doesn't appreciate that kind of goings on in his class. So I don't think I did as well in the class as I might have had I not had that student next to me. Professor Smith, I've already spoken about. Professor Scheidler was on my PhD committee, and I remember to this day the remark he made to me after my exam. He said, "Well, do you feel as though you've released a herd of elephants into the jungle?" And I said, "Yes, indeed I do, and I feel even more stupid now than I did when I graduated from high school." Samuel Rogers taught contemporary literature, and most of the students in my day loved contemporary literature more than any other century of literature because it was up to date. And Professor Rogers was also a practicing writer and knew literature in depth. I was always stimulated by his lectures and the class discussion and the papers he would assign us. Julian Harris taught Old French, and that was my bugbear. I had not had any Latin in high school. I had to take enough Latin by correspondence to be able to even get a B in Old French, and I didn't really care for the subject. Most literature from the Middle Ages is fragmentary only, and that did not appeal to me. Laura Johnson I didn't have as a professor, but she often came to the French house and invited students to her home, too, and she was great on the spoken language and emphasized it a great deal in her high school classes and in her practice teaching courses, I'm told. Professor Michel was my advisor. Now, he always felt inadequate as my advisor because his specialty was 18th century literature, and I was doing my thesis on Flaubert, an author of the 19th century, but I didn't feel Professor Michel was inadequate at all. He gave me invaluable suggestions. He would faithfully read what a chapter at a time as I brought it up the hill, and tell me just where I went wrong if I did, or suggest new avenues to follow. He was very good on bibliography, and I also enjoyed very much his seminar in 18th century literature. André Lévesque and Germaine Mercier were the two natives in the department. Both were from the southern part of France, and you could certainly tell that in the case of André Lévesque, especially. He had quite a sing-songy accent, and we were always amused by his intonations. He taught civilization, and that was another course in which we certainly had to memorize some facts. He was an expert on it, and he and Julian Harris wrote a textbook on French civilization. Germaine Mercier taught conversation, and I always enjoyed hearing her French. She had been to Morocco and had never forgotten it. We heard a great deal about couscous and the Moroccan customs. She seemed to fancy the northern African coast. Edward Milligan was our 19th century literature teacher, and of course that was my favorite century. And he was most thorough. He was very good at appealing to both undergraduates and graduates, I feel. Canadian by birth, I believe. Carl Bottke was not one of my professors, but he directed two French plays that I was in, or at least one in the play circle, I remember. He was the phonetics professor, and he was lots of fun to work with. William Bandy, I took a seminar in Baudelaire from him. Baudelaire was his special weakness. I think he's done quite a lot of publishing on Baudelaire. I must say I wasn't too excited by that course either. It was a little too limited, and I feel that he did too much of the talking and didn't encourage the students to speak too much. But he certainly knew his subject, there's no question about that. There were three other professors that I knew as friends and with whom I socialized, but who were not my teachers, Joseph Tucker, who often came to the French house. His French was a delight. He was a very learned person, and he would invite the girls from the French house over to his apartment very often for teas or parties. Kundaluzenska had the reputation of being an excellent teacher for beginning and second year students, and it was well known that she was discriminated against and that most of the women in the department were discriminated against once they earned their degrees, were not encouraged to stay on. And I've heard that in years after, that was true also. Alex Croft was a Canadian by birth, and his French was just beautiful to hear. He would have French house girls over to his apartment, too, for parties, and very often the Spanish teaching assistants were invited there, too. As for housing, question 55, why did you choose to live at the French house? Well, simply because I wanted to speak the language. Now, it was a good decision because we had two French hostesses in residence, Mademoiselle Yvonne Renoir and Mademoiselle Marie-Hélène Poli, who always helped us with our French at the tables. We were not required to speak French in our rooms, but in the parlors and in the dining room. I had had an excellent phonetics professor at the University of Iowa, and the hostesses were always complimenting me on my French, and that made me feel good, gave me self-confidence to go ahead and keep learning more and more. I lived at the French house, question 56, for 5 years. It was quite a ramshackle old place. Had about a dozen rooms in it. And, well, there just wasn't enough money to keep it up very well. It had recently been redecorated before I started to live there. But it just had old hand-me-down furniture in it. And yet it was comfortable, well-heated. 57. I never had a roommate, well, except for one semester, I think. I always chose to have a single room. I was a very serious graduate student, and I didn't want any interference. 58, our director was Lucille Reed, a very efficient woman who simply saw to it that we paid our board and room, and who was there to help us with any problems we might have. I never had too much to discuss with Lucille, but very often, 59, she was, we didn't have meals at the French house on Sunday evening, and she would go out with us for Sunday meals at the Union, Gregorian room, or wherever. 60. Typical dinner at the French house was usually very good, and especially our dîner gala. I remember one thing that struck me, because I'd never eaten them before, were the pomegranate seeds that were very often sprinkled over the salad. We would often have chili for lunch with dill pickles and crackers, but for the most part, the food was excellent, and for the special occasion dinners, of course, the tables would be decorated, usually in red, white, and blue. And we would have special menus with the old silly little names of the dishes on them. The food was served by students, some of whom were native speakers. I remember one Belgian boy we had who spoke excellent French. There were about a dozen seated at each table. And the house mother, the director, was always there, of course, as were the French hostesses. And manners were stressed, because they are very much stressed in France. I don't believe a prayer was offered. And as for the topics of conversation, well, it was usually our schoolwork, our social life, life in general. The food was attractively served. And 61, yes, we did have some house rules. We had to be in by a certain time at night. And it was up to the director to enforce those rules. 63, leisure time. We went to movies, we went folk dancing. We liked to eat out at restaurants. Winter sports were fun, ice skating on Lake Wingra, and trying out your luck at skiing. 64, very often we would go to the Roma Cafe for spaghetti and Chianti and converse, discuss life in general. 65, the Memorial Union played a great part in our social life. We could go to the Rotskeller for a beer. The graduate club met there on Sunday afternoons. Very often our French club meetings were held there. Many extracurricular activities, dances, and so forth. 66, yes, I would say all ethnic, religious, political minorities, all students had equal access to Memorial Union and other buildings on campus. 69, the movie idols of the day were Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, Cary Grant, Irene Dunne. I can't remember any special movies that everyone saw, but since there weren't too many theaters in Madison, we would usually try to take in the best ones that came to town. 70, the radio show that one girl at the French House watched religiously was the Bob Hope show. But I didn't listen to the radio very much. I was more interested in studying. 71. Yes, I read the Daily Cardinal, and I considered it of high quality compared with others that I had known, although the Daily Iowan was excellent. And the State Press at Minnesota, where I later taught, was also an excellent student paper. 73, well, since students could have beer at the Rotskeller, there was no prejudice against using alcohol. And I believe in those days maybe more students smoked than do now, but drugs, none. There were no drugs that I knew of. 76, I'm not much of a sports fan, but I used to enjoy watching the hockey players practice down by the library and also watch the high jump skiers when they performed. 81. Yes, I had a part-time job, especially in my first year when I was working for my master's degree. This was in the Department of Agriculture. Professor Hopkins was the chairman of agricultural journalism, and I was his secretary. I took dictation, and he was very proud of my work. He would sort of show it off before visiting professors or businessmen who would come there to his office. He would dictate a little note or letter to me, and I would be right back with it, perfect, and then he would nod in approval to the visitor. I also typed the radio scripts for the French radio program. I believe I made about 40 cents an hour. I don't remember exactly. For the radio scripts, I might have gotten paid a little bit more because that took a little more expertise. Mademoiselle Mercier always wrote those, and I sometimes performed in some of the programs. 'Was also very much involved with the French Club, of course. Mademoiselle Pouli was the sponsor of it, and she was always looking for help from the graduate students because they were the real survivors in the language. and could use it and be helpful at suggesting program subject matter. And she, we really were expected to provide her with a great deal of help. I was a student immediately before and during, I suppose, World War II, and we noticed, naturally, the girls, that there were quite a few fellows around when we first went there, especially in the Spanish department. There were a great many of graduate teaching assistants in Spanish, many more than in French, and we often dated those fellows. But before my 5 years were up there, the men were all going off to war, and things were left pretty much to the girls. 104. My career goals when I graduated from the University of Wisconsin were to get a job as fast as I could teaching French, but it was not easy. There weren't many jobs available. I wrote, I think, 100 letters of application with no results, but I attended a French camp on Lake Minnetonka in Minnesota the summer after I graduated, and met there a Frenchman who was teaching at the University of Minnesota. He was impressed with my French, and he got me a job at the University of Minnesota teaching military police in the AST program. My 105, my education certainly did help prepare me for these career goals. We would play games at French camp, which involved literary figures, and of course I would always know the answers because I had, was so well boned up for my PhD prelims. And my brother was also attending the camp, and he had been a French major at Iowa as well as a music major, and he was impressed too by how much I knew, how much I had learned at Wisconsin. 106, yes, I did accomplish my career goals. I went further than I expected to. At Minnesota, there was no chance for promotion. I taught there 6 years as an instructor. My literary knowledge getting rusty the whole time because the staff was small and rather top-heavy with full professors, so that the younger people just had no chance to teach literature courses, and therefore, or even to publish. I was saddled with the French club, French radio program, all of the extracurricular things besides 15 hours of teaching. How can you publish when you are spending all of your time on those pursuits? But when I came to Arizona, I was promoted very fast from the time I started there because the university grew so fast, for one thing. Our staff was small, and we were expected to cover every course in the catalog. This was excellent experience. When I first came to Arizona, there was no French to teach, so I went into politics for about 7 or 8 years. Then Sputnik happened, and when I went back, when I got my job at Arizona State University, everything was being given in the language. All of the courses were being given in the language, and I had to hop a little to keep up with things on that score, too. 107. I have very fond memories of the University of Wisconsin, the student life there, and the quality and scope of the education I received. It seemed as though anything was available that you needed there to fill in the gaps in your field. Great variety of courses and people teaching those courses, and then the experience of living at the French House was just the icing on the cake.